Transportation. It's Wednesday, May 19th. Before we get into the agenda, Janet, is there anything you'd like to bring to our attention?
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay. We have our agenda in front of us. We'll try to start from the top and work down. We'll start with Senate Bill 86. I'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 86. Jen, could you give us a rundown on that? Before we get a rundown on it, we have some amendments to the bill. Have you been involved in all the amendments?
Mr. Chair, the amendments were just available late yesterday. We did write them around to your offices. They're the 86-2 amendments. So you have the original bill and the 86-2 amendments.
So what we've had is a little quasi-subcommittee meeting consisting of Representative Lehman and some other people. Maybe, if you don't mind, Representative Lehman, would you mind explaining where we stand on that, or is there someone else that we should...
Mr. Chairman, the Senate Bill 86 came up with a multitude of problems. It was pretty poorly drafted on the Senate side, and I had to take it on my shoulders to see if we could get it cleaned up over here. So
Representative Lehman, it's always nice to help a senior senator, I know, but I can see one back there squirming a little bit, and he's up to come up and join us. Senator, would you like to join us to protect your honor? Remember, my daughter's a state cop, so I got no protection, too. Thank you, sir.
And Mr. Chairman, if his aim is as good as the still writing, we're okay.
We'll proceed onward and upward.
And, Mr. Chair, I have a vicious dog.
Join us in one of our last meetings and smile, because it's going to enjoy it, even if we don't like it.
Mr. Chair, for record, Senator Rule Turnover, District 24, and I am fine because I've got one more meeting in my committee, and I think that you're getting pretty close to shutting down yours also. I'm very glad that you are hearing Senate Bill 86. And just briefly, this thing was kind of prompted because of an issue in the city of Coos Bay, which their local representative couldn't handle very well. And I had to get involved in this thing with ODOT because of a small fast food restaurant that was going in downtown and fairly close to the same proximity that McDonald's was already established at. And they asked for several parking spaces, and ODOT was willing to give them two. When McDonald's had probably half a dozen or more. That just kind of sparked my interest in this problem of access management. Then along came the city of Coquille with an old mill site that they were trying to develop as a small commercial interest to develop the economic conditions of Coquille. They couldn't get an access site yet properly. So that essentially prompted this bill. And with that, I'm going to let other folks testify on it. But I think it's a very serious problem, Mr. Chair. And hopefully that you folks, whether you amend the bill or whether you can accept it as it came over, or whatever you can do to help further the cause, and if ODOT is willing to work with us on this issue, then that's fine, too, because the problem is very, very real.
Thank you very much, Senator. Appreciate it. Before we get into questions for the benefit of the committee, we thought it might be beneficial if we take 5 or 10 minutes, have ODOT come forward and explain to us what we're talking about access management, so we all have the same dictionary, understand what it's all about, and then get into the bill, because access means a lot of different things to a lot of different people. Before we do that, did you have a question?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I was just going to say, in all seriousness, the bill that Senator Carter sent over, along with the two other bills, 773 and 849, I met with Senator Bryant and Greg Brook from the governor's office, and we sat down, and Representative ODOT sat down and tried to bring those bills together because they are, they deal with the same issue in a different way. And if you think in the language that is going to be acceptable to everybody, that to create some balance, one of the issues that came up very clearly is that whether or not you agree with an access decision, the one thing is you need a process to go through it and resolve it, and that does not exist in any form currently now. And so we spent a lot of time trying to develop the process to deal with these issues, so it's not as disjointed as it appears to be from people trying to get and access. So that's kind of where the bills came from.
And Mr. Chair, I just saw the Advantage 2 and haven't had a chance to go through them yet this morning either, so I don't really know what's going to be.
Well,
I'm a little bit worried.
Well, Senator, if you'd like to take a look at them, I don't know if we'll make work session on this today, but we sure will Friday morning. I'd like to make work session today on it if we can, so if you have a question, please. God bless you for your wisdom. Thank you, bro. Before we get started, do you have any comments? We kind of jumped right over you. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's okay, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out we do have a substantial fiscal for the original bill that you should get in your place. We have, this bill did, most of our bills come through the Senate Transportation Committee. This went through the Senate Water and Land Use Committee, and you do not have a fiscal for the Dash 2 amendments. I do have just a brief description of the Dash 2 amendments that I'll pass out. Okay. Thank you.
If there's no other questions, maybe we get the explanation before us. Mr. Greenleaf, thank you for being with us, and anybody else who needs to join him. I see he has a lady with him. That's nice to have some company. Good morning, Grace.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. I think that's the nicest thing anyone said about me all session. Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Grace Krennican, Director of ODOT. I don't think I've met a legislator that hasn't had a problem with something called access management or very close to it. And that's because there isn't a district in the state that doesn't have a state highway running through it with someone connected to the state highway. As this state has grown, even in the rural areas, ODOT found itself in a position of trying to manage the existing system that we have and maintain safety and trying, in some cases, accommodate huge volumes of traffic or, in other cases, speeds that are there so that the road continues to function as a connector between regional parts of the state. So economic development doesn't just happen in the city or county. Generally speaking, there's a state highway nearby or directly impacted by the development that's happening. We've been trying to be pro-development, welcoming economic expansion in the state, and in some places that means a Bi-Mart on a state highway, and in some places that means housing developments that are connecting very closely. So safety and the maintenance of a transportation system that functions for the entire state is our goal, not eating up on individual property owners. And you might not be able to tell that by some sides of the story. With that as an introduction, Craig Greenleaf has worked very closely with the Senate and various senators on Senate Bill 86 and on the access management question in general. And I'd like to ask him to give you just a broad introduction to access management and what we're about at ODOT. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. My name is Craig Greenleaf. I'm the Director for the Transportation Development Division at ODOT. I think this is, as Grace has indicated, a topic that has a lot of impacts on a lot of different people. And it's unfortunately also one that's got a lot of little nuances and technical details in it that make it a little bit demanding in terms of the subject matter. Just to provide a broad definition about what access management is, it's the process of trying to provide for and do the design work around driveways, how we deal with provision for turn lanes that are typical as part of the system, median where they are, what openings they have, how we deal with the spacing traffic signals on the system. Freeway interchanges present a complicated and additional area of serious concern for the agency. They also impact local road infrastructure and the connections that cities and counties make to the state highway system as well. And in some cases, they involve issues related to the on-site circulation and queuing distances behind drive-up windows and how parking is accomplished on the site and so on. So the reason that we're deeply engaged in this is that we're trying to manage the system for safety purposes. And it's clear that accidents and crashes are typically more frequent at locations where access is provided to the system. Some 55% of all the crashes that we deal with are at those points of access. We also have an interest in maintaining and keeping the mobility of the system in place, moving goods and services on the highway, moving people on the highway, and making sure that we've done a good job of managing the investments that we have in the system. Those are all key factors that can be influenced by the decisions we make about access management. Since 1949, we have had in place a system instituted by legislative action in 1949 to require a permit at a point of connection to the highway. And that requirement has been in place. It certainly has changed with the growth pressures in the state. It's changed with complexities related to permit issues generally. It's changed as a result of land use planning treatment in the state, but it's been in place for a good long while now to have a requirement for a permit at a point of connection to the highway. We have also have in place requirements that deal with points of control or elements of control. This is easily understood when you look at the freeway system, and people don't make an assumption about being able to directly connect to the freeway itself. And ODOT has also acquired access control along other sections and elements of the system. We have, as a result of legislative action in 1951, when we're creating a new highway, when we're placing a new highway into the system, the presumption is that there won't be points of connection onto that new highway as a result of the legislative action that happened in 1951. So, but there are occasions as well when we acquire those access controls that we leave in place what are known as reservations of access. These are gaps at which a person may then apply for one of the permits that's required in order to access the system. These aren't necessarily an absolute guarantee that the permit will be issued at that site, but they are an opportunity for one.
Can I interrupt you for just a minute and keep a holding pattern there? Senator Bryant's with us, and he's in another committee meeting. And if, just stay right there if you would.
Okay.
Senator could join you up there, and then we can continue onward, and then we can get him back to work. We can't have senators not working in this state.
Hope this meeting going better than the one I just left.
I don't know which one it is, but the answer is yes.
My name is Neil Bryan. I'm a state senator from District 27, and there are a couple of bills that are before your committee that I have an interest in, and one of them is Senate Bill 86, and the other one deals with the one that I sponsored on behalf of the Rolling Hills Church. And if I could spend two or three minutes on background and tell you where we are. In my law practice, I get involved occasionally in condemnation issues, and this has been primarily due to the fact that over the past 8 or 9 years, we've been trying to put through a parkway in Bend, and it went through existing property, so almost all of it had to be purchased either voluntarily or through condemnation. And then it tied into all kinds of service roads, even with the city and sometimes the county, so our clients got involved in this process, and last session we passed Senate Bill 1036 that I thought addressed some of the inequities involved, and that's worked well. I'm happy to report that dealt with the exchange of appraisals and when you made offers and those sorts of things. And this time, the issue that caught my interest was access, because I heard stories and had an experience with a client of our firm where he had a deeded access going back to 1950, 1951. He wasn't the owner of the property then, but this person sold a portion of the property to the State Highway Commission and reserved an access onto the road. And then my client went ahead and bought the property later and put a house there and tried to use the access and was told by ODOT no. He says, wait a minute, it's in the deed. It says my predecessor in interest reserved this access. And ODOT's position was, well, if you have other reasonable access, then we don't have to grant you this access, even though it was reserved in the initial deed, even though it's part of the consideration of when the prior property owner sold. And And so that ended in litigation that the property owner was won and has been sitting at the Court of Appeals after briefing and oral arguments for some months. And the case law in this area isn't clear. But then there was the other situation with the Rolling Hills Church where, again, their predecessor in interest was given access to a service road that said unlimited access. And the position of ODOT has been, well, it's not really unlimited because in addition to having the access, you still have to get the permit. And we can say no on the permit for safety reasons or for a variety of other reasons. And for me as a policymaker, that just wasn't a good enough answer. Because if you take away that right to access or limit that right to access, there can be a diminution in the value of the property. And small property owners can't afford the fight to take that up. But, in this case, the Rolling Hills Church or a property owner that has some money or is doing commercial development will raise the issue. So I think it's time for the legislature to say, okay, what is the decision on access? And I'm happy to report that ODOT has taken part in some discussions on that. We've been meeting on a weekly basis. And Greg Wolf from the governor's office is involved, where I think we can present to the committee some ideas on a compromise of how to approach this. And I don't want property owners to be compensated if there's no loss in value. If it's a piece of property and they have five accesses and only can have two, and it doesn't decrease the value of the property, I'm not saying the property owner shouldn't be receiving anything. But in cases where you lose a very good access and it does affect the value of your property, I think there should be compensation. Or ODOT has to be flexible enough to work with you to answer their safety concerns and still give you a good access. So since Senate Bill 86 passed, those have been the negotiation that's been going on, and the leadership of the House and Senate is aware of those discussions and hope we're successful because
Do you feel the access should be of one condition of the use? At this point, there's a little single-family dwelling there that has one access, and it happens to be 12 acres, and they're going to put a shopping center there that's going to have 50,000 cars an hour come through. Does that have some bearing on what we're getting into today?
You bet. It would. And
they don't necessarily deserve that access if they change the use of the property.
That's right. There might be other considerations. For instance, if the property's gone through a zone change and it's now zoned commercial, and it's been that way for 5 years, and if ODOT says I don't want you to have the direct access to the highway, the point would be they've got to allow some access in some reasonable, safe way through the property. The other situation I had as we approached session, I got a call from the city of Bend, and they're did an annexation, and they have a rural fire district, and they're going to build a new fire hall. And they bought the property, and they've done the design, and they're putting out the bid. And the local ODOT public planner, whoever it is, came in and objected to direct access to the highway for the fire station. And for a brief time, argued that there's other access available through the subdivision. Well, what if you need immediate access? So that didn't make much sense. Too, I'm sure people in the subdivision would be happy with fire trucks going through there as they're trying to get to whatever the emergency was. And I'm happy to report the city was able to work that out. But for a few days, I mean, they called their senator and their representative and said, we need some help here, because part of the problem was ODOT came in late and then said no access. So this deals with, I think, an attitude adjustment, too, as far as in the local areas how people view this, and they just can't approach it by saying you might have access, but there's no permit. There's got to be some communication and some work with the parties.
Representative Lehman has a question. Before the question, I want to thank you personally and the other people that met with you getting this together for us in an amendment fashion. You saved us many hours of committee time, and I mean it sincerely, so thank you much. Representative Lehman?
And Senator, I mean, to create a little balance, there are in going through this, a lot of opportunities where There is a deeded access to a state highway where there is a very good access to a city side street.
Right.
That ODOT's perfectly logical and reasonable to say, no, you don't need to put these cars out on the street. You can use this city side street with a stoplight at it. And,
right.
Again, creating that balance so there is both sides of this.
Absolutely. You have to consider in that aspect of consideration.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Bryant, in terms of, I'm trying to understand in terms of looking at the dash twos, and that's what we're talking about here.
I don't have the dash twos.
Are there just further clarification?
Yep.
Are there going to be further clarification on the dash twos?
We came up with these on Monday, so we're still working on them. But my thought would be, because I know you're on an agenda of when you intend to shut down the committee.
Yes, sir.
I know the chair is very firm on this. If you went ahead and worked these, then it would come back to the Senate, and if we needed to make some additional changes, we could put it into the conference committee.
Our plan, Representative Hill, is to get, we weren't here when we started, very ODOT's explaining what access means. We're pretending like Senate Bill 86 does not exist, and Representative Lehman is going to explain the dash two amendments to us of what they do do.
My question is, in terms of reading the original bill and trying to understand here, if I can turn right and left today, and the city decides, you know, the two-way street in front of my property today, the city comes in and says, we're going to bring in a one-way grid, and I can only turn right now. Do they then have to pay somebody for that because it limits, even though you may have a deed today that says you have unlimited access, and I'm reading that out of the original, but I'm just curious in terms of, is that the level of intent here we're talking about, is that depending on where access is today, there may be a new intersection or something which, you know, may have some barriers there that prevent you from turning to the left. It doesn't restrict your ability to get in and out of the property except to the extent that you can no longer turn left. And I'm just curious, is that what we're approaching here? Is that for maybe safety, it may be traffic continuity stuff, are we going to present where we're going to have to pay people because we have restricted their access because they can no longer turn left into their property because of some safety features or something, or there's and they would then have to go a different direction to be able to turn right into their property. I mean, that's kind of the question I'm curious about. And is that your intent to go that direction, or are we talking about the ability for someone to actually have ingress and egress from their property?
Well, the dash two amendments only talks about closes an approach road or denies an application. The situation you gave would be a little bit different, where there's an existing use and the Department of Transportation, and it could be a city or county government too, comes in and says, we want to change that because of the number of people now that are on this road, et cetera, et cetera. Well, clearly under public policy and safety, they'd have the right to do that. If it's an existing use like that, I think there have to be discussions about how does that affect the value of the property. Because if that suddenly becomes so restrictive that you lose 50% of the people that were coming into that property because of the restrictions that are now imposed, that to me would be a subject that where you either have to find another solution to help that property owner, or there is a loss of value. Because even though it's a good reason for doing it, and I support the reason, it's still taking away an existing property right from the owner who, you know, for a number of years has had people coming in and out of his property in that certain way. So in that situation, I think there should be a discussion about how does this affect the value of the property. If there's no diminution of value or there's another access, then there shouldn't be competition.
So, Mr. Chair, just we won't get into debate on this. That's been conference committed before. If you have another question.
I just want to be clear in terms of that is your intent, and that's how you would read the intent of this, is that in the circumstance you just talked there, that's what you're alluding to. That could be one of the possible areas where the compensation would have to be paid.
Right. Now, this particular Section 1, as I read it, doesn't address that situation. It talks about closing or denying a permit. And I'm not sure internally of the process, if you changed it that dramatically, would you have to go in and change the permit, or how would that be implemented?
Mr. Chairman, I think that in some cases that would require us to either revise the original terms of the permit, or in some cases it may basically be almost rewriting the terms of the permit. We have permits that were issued a very long time ago for which the conditions for operation may have not been all that clear. In more recent experience, we've had permits that might speak to the particulars about how to handle the turn movements from the site with quite an exacting level of specificity. So we've got a whole myriad of possible treatments that might have occurred as a result of the way the permit was issued.
And in answer to Representative Hill's comment, if the permit's specific and said in the future we have a right to change this based upon increased traffic and whatnot, then I don't have empathy for the property owner because he or she knew that when they developed the property. But if it's one of the old permits and it says unlimited access, and then they limit it that dramatically, then you need to have a discussion because you'd be, in essence, rewriting the permit and what the access was.
Okay, thank you very much, Jack. I appreciate you coming. Thank you for the brief interruption.
We have provided you a little bit of background around the research of why we believe that access management issues are important and what benefits can be accomplished by having those provisions in place. Speak just a little bit to the volume of permits that we have. We typically issue about 800 permits, standardized to 5,000 and are more active here. The vast majority of these are approved. We typically only deny about 25 permits per year. However, there are many conversations that happen with the department, and in some cases people choose not to apply based on those discussions with the department, so I wouldn't want to represent to you that the 25 is the limit of the places where access is not provided for. Most of these applications come as a result of some land use proceeding. There are probably between 10 and 20,000 land use actions that happen each year. And the vast majority of access management questions come out of those land use proceedings. A plan amendment, a conditional use permit, a zone change, or a specific site-specific site plan review, or similar kinds of land use proceedings. So that's where I think, as you've heard from Senator Bryant, it's an area that we are intending to become more effective in our participation. I think that we have a ways to go in order to improve our performance in that particular area. That's one of the things that we're working on. We've tried to give you an outline of some of the areas of work that we have for the agency right now with respect to access management. First of these is a recently adopted highway plan adopted by the Commission just this last March. This new version of the highway plan is more complete. It's more specific about access management issues and provides some opportunities for some tools and treatments that haven't been in place under the former version of the highway plan, trying to be more specific about how we deal with segment treatments of the highway that are more in concert with the actions of local governments through their local comprehensive plans. Second area is we have undertaken initial work with respect to administrative rules. We have been working with a group that covers a lot of different interests that relate to access management, and that group has been trying to assist us in forming up an administrative rule to deal with access management questions so that we have higher levels of certainty, less ambiguity about the process, more clear understanding about how we are going to make those decisions. The third area is that we've actually done an internal review of our own processes. We're trying to recognize that we have areas of performance that we have to improve upon. We took a close look at our own permitting processes, how we deal with access management, grant access and the deeding process, how we deal with project development. In each of these areas, we've identified a number of changes we think are necessary in order for us to perform more satisfactorily. Also, within our budget, our support around access management issues, including the addition of additional staff that would be directed to the access management questions quite specifically, and have made suggestions about trying to provide additional dollars to deal with the purchase of access where those things were necessary in order to make the system work well. That, in a brief overview, is just kind of a quick synopsis of access management issues for the agency.
Well, thank you, and we did not intend to all of us be professionals on this in 5 or 10 minutes, but it's just to kind of give us on the same footing. If we have time for a couple questions, then we'll proceed forward. Representative Lehman?
Even having worked this regular story, I've got a 5-acre parcel of property that abuts a state highway. There's nothing on the property, and I come in, I want to put a house on that property, and I've got the deed says you've got accesses here, here, and here on the state highway. I build the house, can I go out, put my driveway out to the state highway, and just start driving on, you know, using that as access to my property, just with the deeded portion of it?
Chairman, Representative Lehman, the answer is no, but you still have to secure a permit. The permit deals with the precise location for that point of access. It deals with the construction details, whether or not we need, for example, to put a culvert in place in order to move water, when we're going to construct it, if we, for example, need to deal with details about the angle of approach, the curvature of the approach, coming up so that there's a level point, the site distance for that approach, those are all considerations that would be applied.
Those would be safety issues, correct?
That's correct.
Now, in your budget, if I may ask, do you have that in your safety budget or do you have it in another part of your budget?
Mr. Chairman, the $20 million
money on safety that you really don't take a lot of credit for.
That we is in the safety portion of our budget. That's where the access management.
It's not as safety problem, it is safety. Representative Lehman?
If there's no city, county, or abutting streets to my property, do you have to give me a permit to access the state highway?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lehman, there are two possibilities there. Either we issue that permit, or we have to compensate the owner for the entirety of the parcel, because under the statute as it's currently provided for, we must provide for reasonable access to the site.
The short answer is that if I have no other access, then I'm entitled to a right to the state highway, you've got to buy my property.
Right.
If there's another street abutting that, can you deny me access to say you've got another street to go on, you don't need to come on the state highway and deny the permit?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. However, with one caveat to that, and that is the proximity of the access point to the state highway. Isn't that correct? In other words, if in your judgment you decide that the access that the property owner for this landlocked piece of property has negotiated, if you decide that it's too close to the state highway, then you can say, no, you can't have that permit also. Isn't that correct?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kermel, that is correct. If the result of that is that we don't provide reasonable access to the property, then we have the choice of either issuing the permit or providing compensation for the property.
And in that kind of a situation, then, how close to the state highway will you allow an access to be?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kermel, we have differentiated through the new highway plan based upon both the classification of the highway, for example, a statewide highway versus a district-level highway, and depending on the land use treatment in that particular area, because in some cases land use plans provide for considerable emphasis on the accessibility to the state highway system as opposed to the mobility or the through movement issue.
The short answer is it depends on what the function of the highway is, the size and the use, and what, if you're coming up to an intersection, that's different than if you've got miles of nothing in between.
That's true. Yeah, one more question that I might ask. During these three bills, today and possibly Friday, would you be willing to stay with us in case we have other questions as we move along? Because I'm sure we're going to have some technical questions as we work on the bill.
Thank you. Then as a final question, if there's been a deeded access or an easement that has been deeded and is listed as unrestricted access, but now in your estimation it's too close to the state highway, what is your treatment of that deeded access? And let me add on, if it's listed as being unrestricted on the deed.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kermel, let me speak to the issue of unrestricted, because I think there's some confusion about the meaning of that term. There used to be a period during ODOT's history where we specified not only the location of a point of access, we also issued that reservation and made deed language that was particular to the use. For example, deeded for access for a grocery store or for a motel. Some time ago, the commission made the choice because they were getting a lot of complications from the changes of use that were occurring, to not rely upon that specific treatment of the use authorized at a particular site. And so they went to the term at that point of unrestricted, and that's the way in which language in the deeds is now represented. It was intended to mean unrestricted with respect to use, not necessarily unrestricted with respect to turn movements. Some of the questions that Representative Hill asked earlier about whether there's a median or not a median, right turn in, right turn out, those kinds of treatments were not being spoken to at that point.
And then we'll move on.
One clarification. Right now, if I've got a deeded access to a state highway and there is another size street, and you say, I'm sorry, we're not going to give you permit to enter on the state highway, you need to use city street XYZ. Is there anything in the process that allows me to come in and say, you know, that's terrific, except I'm going to lose 20% of my business because I can't do that? Or, in fact, is that what we're trying to solve with Senate Bill 86 and the amendments?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Ringman, I think that's the primary target of the amendments to Senate Bill 86.
Mr. Chairman, to clarify, right now in statute, really there's no way to resolve that unless short of litigation, which, as I understand, ODOT wins most of those cases when I come in and say there's been a diminishing value. And
that's correct.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Yes, go ahead. We have one of the questions. They just won't stop asking questions up here.
Just clarify.
For our dictionary, what does unrestricted mean? To some people in Cascade Locks, 50 cars is a bunch. In Portland, it's nothing.
Mr. Chairman, the term unrestricted has been a term that ODOT has used to mean unrestricted with respect to the land use on the property.
Now we're back. Representative Logan?
Thank you. I have a letter here from a company in Sherwood. They're having some problems with access. And they have a deed that reserves right of access in three particular locations. And now that's being challenged by ODOT, and they feel that they had this and it was too bad. Now they're denying access to property, and it will impact them financially. And is there any way that this amendment then is going to help people get caught in a situation like that? As the city has granted them approval to develop and use one of these in-and-out access locations. And then ODOT came and challenged that, and now it's in limbo.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Logan, I think that the bill is intended to help that kind of a circumstance. Those discussions are still occurring. We have a mixture of local government regulations that are in place that influence this permit, as well as state regulations. That's another area that we are aiming to try and resolve. It is aimed that the resolution of that is probably more in Senate Bill 773 than it is in the amendments to 86, but that I think clearly those kinds of issues are the target of where these bills are attempting to clarify action.
Thank you. We'll move on, and when we get into work session, we'll ask maybe to come and work through this. We have some guests to speak to us, but I think it's even best, Representative Lehman, if you would explain where we are. As far as I'm concerned, Senate Bill 86 is no more. Dash 2 amendments are more. And that's what we're looking at to be Senate Bill 86 as far as I'm concerned, personally. Could you kind of explain what the amendments do and the agreement and all the parties that have been you've been meeting with?
Yes, sir, Your Honor. It's a courtroom for me. This is sure. Two things. You know, it's important to keep 773 and 86 on the radar screen at the same time because they're in some ways very related. 773 deals with the permitting process and sets up a procedure that ODOT's going to have to go through in the permitting process. So it again gives you that process to go through to determine whether a permit is issued or how it's issued or restrictions on it. 86 talks about whether or not ODOT in fact has to issue a permit and a process to go through when you have some kind of formal deeded access and the Department of Transportation is saying for some reason or another, we're not going to let you use that access like you think you should. Right now, as I think Mr. Greenlee said, and I may confuse this more, but as I understand, right now, if you're not denied total access to the state highway, if you deny total access, you go to court on a condemnation, they buy the property, they'll give you access. Pretty simple. Right now, if it's not a matter of being denied, it's just being told, use this other access or do something different, there's really no process out there to resolve those issues. The problem, as I understand it, is ODOT feels constrained by the Highway Trust Fund. In other words, they can't use dollars for non-highway-related purposes of going in and compensating somebody if the use of the property is diminished because they feel like they could be challenged in court for violating the constitutional restrictions. This sets up a process whereby you can go through a contested claims issue and you can say, I think this has cost me X dollars because I've had to change the use of this access. And this sets that process up to resolve those short of having to go out and file a very contentious, costly litigation to resolve it. As Senator Bryant pointed out in the meetings he had, some of the problems occur with very small claims, $10,000 or $15,000 that a landowner simply cannot follow through because you can't even afford the cost of the appraisal, let alone the attorney, to bring the claim. This is meant to allow more people access to a contested claims process to resolve the dispute, how much the value of their property is diminished because their deeded access was controlled by the permit process. And I'd push you that up.
Well, I think it would be best if we get on with our... You have one question, then we're going to the testimony.
Yes, I do have a question about the amendment. On line 15, you say the director may provide the opportunity for the parties to participate in mediation. Why isn't the director shall? Because to me that indicates the director doesn't have to if they don't want to.
I think the rationale there are some cases that may or may not even benefit from mediation. This is just providing the opportunity for those cases that would benefit. Not all issues are even going to be resolved, need to be resolved by mediation. Sometimes they're resolved right by the Department of Transportation very quickly and efficiently. You don't need mediation there. Some cases, by the very nature of them, you say, you know, we're going to be in a court of law resolving this, and you go that direction. I mean, I think the intent is it's going to be offered in a multitude of cases to be resolved. But some of them probably may not merit mediation.
And who's going to pay for the mediation? Is that set up in the bill? If not,
ODOT does.
without paying for it? Okay.
Okay, thank you. We will start with the testimony, and then we can have discussions as long as you want, as long as it doesn't go past 9:45. First one up is Melanie Mansell, the attorney someplace. Thanks for being here.
Good morning. Montgomery committee members. I represent a gentleman who owns a store and gas station for the last 18 years, and this morning I'd like to just give you a real-life application of why we need to create a property right interest in highway access. Now, this gentleman has two highway accesses to his property, as well as a side road access. As I said, he's named...
Yeah. Yeah, when you say two highway accesses, two deeded...
And which he has used the last 18 years. He also lives on this property, so this is not only his home, it's his livelihood. Recently, ODOT has proposed changing the side road location where it intersects the highway, and in doing so, we'll seize both highway accesses, terminating both highway accesses, and saying use the side road access. Under the current law, the loss of those two highway accesses is not compensable because of that phrase, there's an alternate access. But therein lies the rub. It's the alternate access. What is that? In my client's case, it's proposed that when they move this side road, they're going to make a connecting extension road so that the side access will connect to the extension access, which will connect to the side road, and then to the highway. But this is a business. If customers miss the side road, when they actually see his business and attempt to enter it, they cannot. They have no other choice but to pass by. And it gets worse. The alternate access is not wide enough for a car and a truck to pass at the same time. And his home is located right by this side access. In fact, if a fuel truck comes to deliver to his underground storage tank, no one can get in or out of his business for a period of half an hour, 45 minutes, however long it takes to fill the tank, and this occurs every 10 days. So basically, by this plan, this business is shut down every 10 days. And that doesn't count the other delivery trucks that come and deliver to the food mart. So basically, you see that what's alternate doesn't always mean what's reasonable, and without a property right to the highway accesses that he loses, he really doesn't have any compensation for this effect. And on top of it, he can't control when the deliveries come. They can come at the prime time of the day. It doesn't matter. He has no control. Now, as a partial solution to this problem, ODOT proposes putting a paved loop around his property and around his home that will join back into that single access. It won't address the width problem with the single access. It will help with some parking situations when people are coming in, but it won't help entering and exiting this building. The problem with that solution, it cuts through his property, which is currently in farm deferral behind the store. The county now has advised if he accepts this proposal, they will terminate his farm deferral, and you know what that means. He has to recapture the taxes for the last 5 years, again resulting in thousands of dollars to him. In addition, the problem here is it goes right over his septic field drain for his home, and it's unlikely the county's going to go along with that, and it's going to force him to do something else with that problem. Finally, his fuel supplier advises him that he's going to anticipate losing 30% of his business because of this restricted access through the side road, through the extension road, and into his building. All of this is not a compensable event under the law as it currently stands. So it doesn't matter what effect it has on his business, doesn't matter what effect it has on the taxpayer, doesn't matter what effect it has on the Norvillian. In fact, the court has clearly said, this is the state of the law. He said ODOT usually means, that's true. They say that the inconvenience, the reduction in profits, or depreciation in value of property that occurs as a result of a legitimate exercise of the state's police power is not a compensable taking. My understanding with the amendment that you have before you, that you can change that today, and I ask you to do that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have an attorney here going to ask you a question.
I caught that when you said, Your Honor.
Always great going to ask attorneys a question from up here. Why is it about making the changes to the access to the highway? Is there a legitimate reason for doing so?
Oh, sure. We're not challenging that there is a legitimate reason. They want to create a deceleration lane for the new location of the side road intersecting the highway. And so the deceleration lane will go right past the door.
Well, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
I'm working on this and trying to get to it today.
Thank you.
On our list, we have two other people signed up to testify. John Logan, if I pronounce it right. And if someone's with you, please come forward. Is Lynn Peterson together with you? If so, please come forward or whatever you'd like.
Good morning. I'm John Liljegren with Westward Development Corporation in Portland, Oregon. I'm also involved with the International Council of Shopping Centers, a retail trade organization, and I've asked Tim Ramos to join me. He signed up to testify on another bill, but I've asked him to talk a little bit about the history, some of the change, and how ODOT has access issues with the change in the 1990s. But first, I'm going to talk about the original Senate Bill 86. I had some involvement in the early stages of writing that bill. I've given a handout which summarizes my points, but my first one is ODOT's deeds should mean what they say. There's some confusion, some smoke being blown about as to whether Senate Bill 86 would create property rights or whether it just confirms the property rights that have been acknowledged and granted by ODOT and DEEDS. And I ask you to turn to the second page of my handout.
Talking about 86, you're talking about the old 86 or the dash to amendments?
The old 86. I'll come back to the amendments.
Thank you.
Because I think there's some significant omissions in the amendments that the original bill deals with. But if you look at the second page of the handout, it contains some language that I've typed up that comes right out of deeds that we dealt with in property acquisitions. We had two projects that triggered my conviction that we needed this kind of law. One was in Florence, Oregon, and the other was in Gresham. The deed at the bottom of that second page of my handout is from the Gresham property right on Paul Boulevard in an urban area. And I've highlighted in yellow at the bottom the key language, reserving for service of grantors remaining property access rights, underline access rights, to and from said remaining property to the abutting highway right-of-way at the following place. And you can see they specify highway engineer station. You can determine to the inch the location of that access point on a highway. The width is specified and the purpose is, as noted, unrestricted. And I'll come back to that in a minute. There's no ambiguity here. When ODOT went to these property owners, and in this case, it was 1985. We're not talking about ancient history. We're talking about 1985, at which time the subject property was zoned for commercial retail development. So we're not talking about a change in use. ODOT came to these property owners and said, we are going to take some additional property to expand the right-of-way. And, of course, they had to compensate the owners for that. You can see in Gresham they paid the owner $700. For the additional right-of-way. And they also bought up all access rights that that property owner had, except, as noted in the deed, they reserved the one specific and only access to the highway. My point is, and the point of the original SB 86, is ODOT should mean the deeds they write. ODOT wrote this deed. Property owner didn't write this deed. Lawyer for the property owner didn't write this deed. Real estate developer didn't write this deed. ODOT wrote this deed. And ODOT's deeds ought to mean what they say, and ODOT ought to honor its contract with citizens of this state. and they should not be allowed to just ignore the clear language of deeds that they write and negotiate with properties when they're threatening those properties with condemnation. The language is not unclear. And I'd like to address the issue of unrestricted. As my top page says, unrestricted means unrestricted. I would like to take issue with Mr. Greenleaf. Whatever ODOT might think unrestricted means, this is a contract between two people. There needs to be a meeting of the minds as to what both of them mean. This is a deed about access. The purpose statement in the deed has to do with the access. What's the purpose of the access? Not the purpose of the land. Zoning deals with the purpose of the land, and the zoning in place at the time the deeds were written by ODOT said that this property could be developed for general commercial purposes, meaning shopping centers. There was no doubt about that. The purpose and the term unrestricted, what can it mean other than you have full turning movement? Right in, right out, left in, left out. I just frankly don't find it credible to think that this term unrestricted purpose had to do with the land use. If ODOT meant that, ODOT could have said that. But it didn't.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Taylor.
You know, it really did limit it for me when I see that under purpose, that it limited it to the use rather than meaning unrestricted access. Because this is actually the way the contract was written,
right,
and it was under that heading, then I think for me, that does mean the purpose of the use.
But the point of the paragraph is to talk about the access.
I understand that.
And the purpose of the access is to allow turning movements into and out of the property. As a lease, there is an ambiguity, and there's no meeting of the minds, in which case maybe we go back to the multiple access points that the property owner had at the time that the deed was written. Perhaps you get into an argument in court or someplace about what the parties meant at the time the deed was negotiated. But I think it is clear that ODOT had the capability to write to restrict those terms if they wanted to. The third page of my handout has a excerpt from two deeds in the Florence property. And there's a drawing of that property on the last page of my handout. It shows that these three parcels we assembled had among them six deeded access points. When we came to ODOT to seek a permit, ODOT said, you have no rights to access, none. And they wanted us, we have eventually negotiated an agreement with ODOT, but initially their position was, you need to buy the two parcels to the north of your project and build a road through one of those parcels to the north and then connect behind, which would have killed the project and eliminated any value of that property to the owner. The point is, on the third page of my handout, highlighted at the bottom, you can see where ODOT was fully capable in 1985 of writing language that restricted or put conditions on an access point if they wanted to. And when they chose not to, I think those deeds should mean what they say, which is that the property owner has an access right. I'm going to stop at that point. I'd like to come back and address the amendments because I think there's a real problem with the amendments as written. But Tim is going to talk a little bit about the history.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, Tim Ramis. I'm a lawyer and my practice is in Portland. I emphasize land use issues in that practice, and I spend about half of my time representing property owners and development projects and about half of my time representing local governments as city attorney for Tigard, Westland, and Milwaukee. I want to be clear for your record that I have not been asked by any of my clients to be here today on this issue, but it's an issue that certainly my practice has been involved with for many years. I'm here to speak for the original language of Senate Bill 86 and to raise serious doubt about the Dash 2 amendments. To summarize, I think if you adopt the Dash 2 amendments in place of 86, it will be a disaster for property owners. 86.
So you're saying the Dash 2 amendments do nothing?
it would be terrible for a property owner.
So this is currently written. Your opinion, send it to Lady Six as we have it, or don't do anything.
Yes.
Unless, that's what you're going to end up with if that's how you feel. So please go ahead.
Yeah. Unless there's substantial amendments to the Dash 2 amendment.
There won't be any more than one or two amendments to any vote in this committee for the rest of the session.
The serious flaw in the Dash 2 amendments is that while they establish a procedure, they don't really tell you what right it is that your procedure for relief is to address. 86, as originally crafted, establishes a right for property owners, establishes something to be compensated. The Dash 2 amendments establish a procedure and then abandon totally the right that was being created, and that's the essential problem with it. Two quick points I'd like to make with respect to some of the arguments that have been made about 86 and its original version. First, the claim that somehow it would be a substantial departure from the past. In fact, 86 as written would return us to the policies that guided ODOT in their administration of access from the period from the 1950s through the early 90s. During that time period, the agency recognized that if you had a deed of access and it was to be cut off, that cutoff of right either needed to be negotiated or compensated for, and that was the practice. So the bill simply asks that the policy of the agency be returned to the policy that served the state well throughout that time period. There's a lot of work that's been done by a lawyer in Portland, Chip Hudson, and I'll be happy to provide you with that work he provided on the other side, which establishes that case.
That was part of the packet.
I believe you do have that. A second point that's been made about 86 is the fear that it will cost literally millions of dollars to administer in the future. That, of course, is an empirical question, and one that can be addressed by simply looking back to the past. We have 40 years of experience with administering basically the policy that's in 86. If it indeed costed millions and millions of dollars for biennium, that will be obvious from the expenditures in the past. I suspect that that wasn't the case, because the effect of the old policy, the one that's being proposed to be reinstated in 86, was that both sides in the equation had some leverage in the negotiation. The property owner had a right that was recognized by the agency to obtain access. The agency had a power recognized by the developer to stop the project by condemning the access away. The result was normally a negotiated resolution. To give you an example, a few years ago I represented a property owner and developer that had a deeded access to Highway 26. It had other access to a local street, but was very circuitous and very dangerous through parking lots and other indirect routes. And it was clear the property could not be developed adequately by that circuitous route. We went to ODOT and said, we have a right to access off of the highway. ODOT recognized that right, but we all recognized that that would not be a good access in the long run. So what we did was renegotiate the deed to be a temporary access, that is, an access directly to 26 until the local government could solve this indirect access problem and create a new local street. Today, that local street's been created, and the direct access to 26 is extinguished. That's the type of negotiated resolution that reasonable people on each side were able to reach when there was equal leverage on both sides. And 86, I think, is a good bill because it returns us to those good policies of the past.
Thank you. Well, thank you both.
Could I add a couple of comments?
Please, we're really under time constraints, so I appreciate your drive.
I think if you put the two together, the original SB 86, which sets in law that access point, or affirms in law what has been known up until the early 90s, which is that deeded access is indeed a property right, you put that in the law so that you don't have situations where you've got a case in Washington County. As of yesterday, in the Sherwood case that Representative Loken was referring to, the Washington County Circuit Court made a decision granting ODOT's motion to dismiss and basically not acknowledging the property rights of the deeded access. You've got a court in Deschutes County that Senator Bryant referred to reaching the opposite conclusion. So you've got case law going all over the place. What we need is for the legislature to say this is indeed a property right as it was understood by both parties at the time the deed was executed. Then combine that with the process that the Dash 2 amendments set forth. The Dash 2 amendments do not set out any standards for the decision maker to refer to. We're still left in nowhere land, not knowing what these standards are by which a decision is to be made. Put the two together, and you may have a pretty good bill. Thank you.
Well, that's what we're going to try to do here, and I really appreciate your understanding. Next person up is Lynn Peterson.
Good morning, Chair Montgomery and members of the committee. My name is Lynn Peterson, advocate for 1,000 Friends of Oregon. 1,000 Friends of Oregon is a statewide, nonpartisan, nonprofit organization that supports sound land use planning and management. We strongly opposed the original language contained in Senate Bill 86, and we would like to acknowledge the work that went into determining the intent for Senate Bill 86 in the attempt to solve a more specific problem. However, this time we have concerns with the replacement language in the Dash 2 amendments. I'm a member of the Oregon Department of Transportation's Access Management Advisory Committee, and through this process, the stakeholders in ODOT have worked to clarify policies and procedures for access management. We've looked at shortening the time frame for decision-making and creating procedures for testing access in areas where access control may no longer be needed. These are the important elements of a successful access management program that balance highway user safety and investment with abutting land use needs. I think a lot of our concerns may be able to be met through the rulemaking process that's going on right now within ODOT, but I would like to just raise these concerns. One would be, how do we measure significant reduction in the value of a subject property in Section 2, Line 14? Will appraisals of property value be based on the planned zoning at the time that ODOT granted or reserved the access, or on the value of the newly proposed access or the newly proposed development? And that's in Section 3, Line 21. This question on the appraisal value focuses on the fact that ODOT originally gave deeded access based on assumptions of low trip generating land uses such as single family residential or farming. If the zoning changes, should the taxpayer be held responsible to pay off the developer for the difference between the initial residential land value and the proposed commercial land use if reasonable alternative access exists? And then the last issue I would raise is, how many more applications? We have a case history now based on a different set of rules. How many more applications are expected to occur annually due to the ability of the applicant to seek relief, quote unquote, and what type of fiscal impact will this have on ODOT over the years? So I think it's still pretty much the rulemaking, but those are concerns.
Thanks for being with us, and we'll move on. That's all we have scheduled to testify on Senate Bill 86. I think what I'd like to do is close the public hearing. No more testimony on 86. We'll look at what we have, and we will go into work session on this Friday morning. I asked the committee to be here bright and early, and that could be our last day. If you're not here, we'll meet Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night next week, and that's a promise. If we can get this through, I think that's great. We need to do something. It's a very serious problem. What they're doing now is taking people's property rights away from them. That's wrong, and we've got to work a compromise. For the gentleman who testified, we also have a constitutional problem sometimes, and we have to count to 31. So that's what we're trying to work out now, is some kind of a compromise that at least gets some of the property rights back, if not all of them. Thank you very much for coming. We will close the public hearing and go into work session on this Friday morning. The next bill up, we have quite a few people here to testify on that. We will adjourn at 9:45, so we ask your understanding and your brevity if you can. If not, keep talking. We'll open the public hearing on Senate Bill 773, and we have one of the same people who are just up here. We'll start right at the top. The League of Oregon Cities Association of Counties.
David, go ahead. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Carlson. Blackman with the Association of Oregon Counties, and I want to thank you for the opportunity to express our support for Senate Bill 773. We were part of a party to a work group that, in the interim, that looked at some access management questions, and as a result of some of that work, we have Senate Bill 773 before you. Mr. Chair, I'll be very brief at this point. We think the direction that is provided in Senate Bill 773 is very good. We think it'll help local government, property owners, and the state by directing ODOT to adopt administrative rules dealing with access management in terms of process, procedures, requirements, standards, et cetera. So we think that's very positive. Let me just mention one other piece that I believe is very positive, and that is enabling legislation that would allow a local government to enter into an intergovernmental agreement setting forth provisions for and allowing the local government to issue access permits on some regional and district highways in accordance with the highway plan, state statutes, administrative rules, and the locally adopted transportation system plan. We think that that working relationship will be very beneficial and help expedite access permits in the future. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'll conclude. We ask for your support of Senate Bill 773.
Thank you. We have about five people signed up to testify. It looks like everybody's pretty much in favor of it. And we may be able to get in the work session today and get this bill out unless everybody keeps talking. So my question is also, there's some dash amendments to this. Are you familiar with those? They add a couple words to it. Are you okay on the amendments, and have you seen them? They're called the dash 9 amendments. Is that the current one?
Mr. Chair, I have not seen the dash 9, but I think I know what they are. We, at least for our organization, we would have no objection to the dash 9 amendments.
Thank you, and maybe David could look at those as he's preparing to give us a few words.
Very few words. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I essentially second what my colleague from the Association from Oregon County has said. We also want to acknowledge the work the department has done in a collaborative way with all the different parties to try to move forward on the rulemaking process, and that they really have gone out of their way to listen, especially to local government, to try to work on changes to addressing access in a way that brings all the parties in and is a much more inclusive and equitable process. And we have no problems with the amendments and would support them. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you for your understanding. I apologize, Janet. I jumped right over you. And Reverend Loken, did you have a question earlier?
I have, but I'm thinking if ODOT is going to testify, this might be more appropriately directed to them.
Thank you both very much. And for the record, Janet, who brought these amendments forward?
Mr. Chair, my understanding, these are brought by the Department of Transportation.
Okay, so we know we're looking at. Okay, thank you. Mr. Ramos, your faculty, thank you for being here. Have you seen the amendments also, sir? We've just received like you, we've just gotten them.
Again, for your record, Tim Ramos, lawyer in practice in Portland. Not here on behalf of any particular client. My practice, I tend to represent both local governments and property owners. I'm here in support of the bill and in opposition to the amendment that you've been offered. The bill attempts to resolve what is an essential disconnect that's going on in Oregon's land use system today. On the one hand, we have broad consensus on the land use side, local government, LCDC, that we need to be encouraging compact growth and development, and we need additional connectivity of our street system to make that work. At the very moment where developers are trying to make that happen and local governments are trying to make that happen, the state, through ODOT, is pursuing a very strong policy of restricting access. These come into conflict because in an effort to create the kind of connectivity that will allow compact urban form and intense development, we often need connections to the streets. We need additional connectivity, and we don't have a seamless system. We've got, as the director indicated, a system that interconnects. And if you can't create your project because you can't get access to a road that's critical, and it happens to be a state highway, then you've got a problem. So this bill deals with that question in two ways. First, it addresses the criteria for access permitting and essentially says that there should be rulemaking and that the criteria employed in access permitting have to recognize and be consistent with local comprehensive plans and the uses that are permitted there. That approach is taken so that the access permit process used by ODOT is not used to veto many years of land use planning by local governments. It also calls for consistency with the local transportation system plan. That piece of it is key because it enables ODOT to get involved in the transportation system plan and to resolve differences with local governments over where access is going to be. So it puts the critical planning issues up front rather than at the end of the process after somebody has gone through planning, gone through a long application process, only to find at the end they can't get a permit. The second thing the bill does is to deal with procedure. The governor has called upon the agency, ODOT, to become a growth management agency, and its primary tool is, of course, the use of the access permit. What the bill says is that if the agency is to be a growth management agency, it should essentially follow the same procedures that are used by local governments. The legislature has imposed on local government a fair process, a fair set of procedures. This bill would, in effect, say you need to follow similar procedures at the state level. Adopted criteria, no change in the rules after an application is filed, 120-day time clock. All the fairness procedures are adopted. Now, the amendment that's been offered was also proposed in a slightly different version on the Senate side and rejected there in committee because it would restore to the criteria the same criteria that are being used now to veto local government decisions. What's being done now in the permitting process is to say, well, we've got a safety concern, we're going to deny. Or we've got a functionality concern, we're going to deny the permit. So it really doesn't belong in this bill. We've got the purpose of the bill. Now, it doesn't mean that ODOT cannot bring those issues into the conversation. They should bring them into the conversation. But the place to do that is where they adopt a statewide transportation system plan and the process by which they make that plan consistent with local governments. It should be done in the upfront planning process, not at the end of the game in the permitting process. And that's the message of it.
Thanks. Lynn
Peterson.
Chair Montgomery, member of the committee, for the record, Lynn Peterson, 1000 Friends of Oregon. We've pretty much remained neutral on this bill, but we still have some concerns, and I'd like to address. I think that the amendments that have been brought forward today should be added. I don't believe that most of the development that occurs along a state highway is necessarily transit-friendly, pedestrian-friendly, compact development. It's development that's dependent upon vehicle trips to get to that development, and that is in direct conflict with the safety aspects and efficiency criteria that ODOT needs to be able to manage their highways. So adoption of those amendments would meet that concern of ours. And then finally, the last section 3, line 44.3, sub 3, where it says, in determining what is reasonable, the department shall consider the authorized uses for the property identified in the acknowledged local comprehensive plan. I think that the way things have been set up now, that ODOT has the authority to look at why did they grant that access in the first place, why did they put that deed access in place. Again, we're going back to what was the assumption. It was based on a certain specific land use back maybe in 1950 of a low trip generating use. And this is assuming that, you know, a change in that zoning still meets the assumption of ODOT, and I think that maybe you should consider striking that language that's been added into the bill. So that'll be the end of my comments and questions.
Thank you very much. Thanks for being here. I appreciate it. Thank you. Craig Greenleaf, your have some on our list here this morning.
My name is Grace Fennigan, Director Hodak. With me is Craig Greenlee. There are three things that were broken. One is our employees, to this bigger question of access management. One is our employees out in the field, the training they received, the lack of sophistication they had. Sometimes they just walked in their first job at ODOT was working the permit counter on access management. The degree to which we didn't differentiate between a large development coming in and a farmer who wanted to shift his operations from making one state highway to another state highway corner or small driveway changes. So that's one problem. We've been dealing with that inside ODOT. We have 23 things we're changing inside the department to try and fix things. Another piece was the process deal. Developers need certainty. They need to know they need timely responses, those kinds of things. The process by which we go through our decision making and the process for appeal was very unclear to an outsider. Once the permit counter told them no, they didn't know where to go inside the department. Those are the kind of issues that this bill 773 is addressing. The other issue, the third issue, is the absolute law that we have to deal with, and that's what Senate Bill 86 is about. We're very supportive of this 773 dealing with the process. We've had one underway. We invited to the negotiation table to look at the process. This process is underway right now. This law makes us complete the process. We have no objection to it. However, the process that we have underway right now involves a wide range of individuals from Oregonians in Action to 1,000 Friends of Oregon. We've invited everyone to the table. The amendments that are here we support because functionality and safety are what we're all about, and we need those considerations in the process that we go through. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Professor Logan, did you have a question?
Yes, I'm kind of relating this to a local situation on Highway 99 East in the Milwaukee area. And what I'm wondering, and maybe now I'm wondering whether it would be the Senate Bill 86 or this bill, but how do we handle the rights of stakeholders? And we've been talking about some of that. There are people who are affected by these changes, and where do their views come in? I was just reading in Senate Bill 773, line 15, page 2, says nothing in the subsection gives a city, county, or other person that might be affected standing to appeal any decision of the department regarding granting of the permit. Sounds pretty final.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Logan, I think that we are trying to make sure that the affected participants do understand the decision making and are able to get after the question. The interests that were directed to that particular language when the bill was discussed in the Senate side were to try and create a clear appeals opportunity for the applicant without necessarily enlarging the appeals forum so wide that any participant could lodge an appeal. And so without creating an appellate nightmare, I guess, the interest of trying to make sure that people did have access to this decision, there was language which Senator Hannon introduced to try and make sure that we do inform people about the implications of this. This is particularly true. I think your example on Highway 99E is a good example, mm-hmm. where in some cases we may be trying to work through an issue where there's a joint access. And if there is a joint access, then certainly we need to involve everybody who would be affected by that. I think that the intent of the language is to try and make sure that those things do happen. And that's the aim of the language without creating an administrative difficulty in expanding the scope of this and providing too administrative and bureaucratic a process so it will break down.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. One more question, and we'll move on to the next one.
Is there any is there any public hearing or, now this strip has many, many access situations on it, and let me look at it directly. So, it's not going to be just one stakeholder that's concerned. It involves this area. Will those stakeholders, is there a process by which they're going to be truly heard, they're feeling like they come together? I think there is a committee working on it now that's helping, but how can we protect these stakeholders so that they feel they're really heard and that their appeals are going to be, and questions and needs are going to be taken into consideration and acted upon if necessary?
Chair Montgomery, Representative Loken, the way I read this bill is it directs us to institute a program where we do have to ask everyone to participate in the process, and that's what we're doing. And the reason for the last one is to say that we're supposed to have a process that includes everybody's thoughts, but it doesn't want, it's not, the bill is trying to be clear in my read of it that by including everyone in the discussion, we're not giving them legal standing beyond what they have today. So if they're an adjacent property owner, they do have some right to comment, but if they're, you know, a mile down the road, they do not. Craig, is that right? So the clarifying language that's directed here is just to say ODOT go through the process, but nothing in this process is intended to extend legal standing to anyone in addition to those that currently have the standing now. Mm-hmm. And the process will include the thoughts of everyone in it. Yeah.
Thank you. We will not go into this. This is a closed public hearing on Senate Bill 773. So we have other guests. If we have time, we can come back to this bill, but we need to honor the people who are showing up this morning to not make them come and wait again. So at this point, public hearing on Senate Bill 849. We have Bill Cotton and Wendy Killington, and Janet, could you give us a brief rundown on this bill, and then ask them to talk to us. Thanks for being here. Janet.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senate Bill 849, the Senate Transportation Committee, was not amended. The sponsor was Senator O'Brien. It establishes rights in utility or service roads that serve lots or parcels when a portion of the lot or parcel has been acquired by the Department of Transportation. And it requires the department to allow unrestricted use of service roads unless the department purchases the access rights to the service road. We do have a fiscal statement for the bill and the components of the bill are here to put. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you both for waiting it out. We got to you. That's the main thing. And so, please, thanks for being here. I don't know how you'd like to go with everything else you said.
I'll go ahead and lead off, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Good morning, members of the Transportation Committee. My name is Bill Colton. I'm one of the pastors and one of the elders at Rolling Hills Community Church, and I'm representing both the church and the Rolling Hills Foundation. Rolling Hills Community Church is located on 33 acres. At 3550 Southwest Borland Road in Tualatin, Oregon. The tax lot map that's attached as Exhibit 1 to the document that I've given to you shows our location along the north side of I-205 freeway, just west of Stafford Road interchange on that freeway. Rolling Hills Foundation owns the 5-acre tax lot 900, which is also identified on that map, which has a service road access to Stafford Road. Our church plans to expand its current facility and its parking capacity, and we've proposed to use the foundation's tax lot 900 access to Stafford Road to facilitate access to and from our parking lot and to avoid the Borland Road and Stafford Road intersection. A little bit of history. Tax lot 900 had become landlocked by construction of I-205 in the late 1960s. The problem with it being landlocked was resolved when ODOT, Oregon Department of Transportation, acquired a 60-foot wide parcel which divided tax lot 1,000 and then built a service road across that. Rolling Hills Foundation acquired tax lot 900 in April of last year, 1998. Prior to doing that, when we examined the documents regarding tax lot 900, we learned that it had rights to the service road that ODOT had created across tax lot 1000, and that there was also a court judgment, which I've attached as Exhibit 2, that made it clear that, quote, there shall be no restriction of access, end quote, to the service road. We also reviewed a copy of a February 26, 1998 letter to the owner of Tax Lot 1000 from ODOT Senior Agent Roland Arney, which I've also attached as Exhibit 3, which made it clear that access to the service road and to Stafford Road was, again, unrestricted. Just to be sure, we communicated directly with Mr. Arney, who confirmed the status of the road and that it could be used. And since everyone seemed clear that ODOT retained no access control to the intersection of the service road and Stafford Road, we determined that Tax Lot 900 was an appropriate purchase for the foundation to make. And we went ahead and did that, as I said, in April of 1998. When we spoke with Clackamas County about our the staff, about our plans to use the service road as part of our expansion of our facility and our desire to provide a left turn lane onto Stafford Road, they deferred us to ODOT because of the proximity to I-205. So we went and met with the ODOT staff. They, at that time, would not discuss potential improvements to Stafford Road because they said it would not be, because they said we would not be permitted to use the service road. They would not provide any documentation justifying their position. So at that point, we consulted with an attorney, and I have Ms. Wendy Kellington, who is an attorney with me this morning. And she advised us concerning ODOT's authority to restrict access and told us that there was no authority to do that. And so we scheduled a second meeting with ODOT, with their staff, to see if we could either discuss our project or if they could at least provide documentation of their position. Again, they maintained their position that they could restrict our access, and they referred us to the Attorney General's office for justification. Ms. Wellington will provide more specific information about the legal issues, but there's a sentence in the Attorney General's letter that was in response that defined the position, and it says, quote, the unrestricted access merely reserves a right to apply for a permit from ODOT. And then later in the letter, it said that if we were to do that, that it would, you know, likely be denied. Now, there's been no proof of ODOT's right from our standpoint to restrict the use of the service road, and their unwillingness to work with us is on some reasonable improvements to Stafford Road makes it difficult for us to get permits from the county for our expansion to serve our people and our congregation. So this bill, Senate Bill 849, seems to be the best way to clarify that unrestricted actually means unrestricted, and so that's how we're here.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Wendy Kellington. I'm an attorney also in Portland, and my practice is almost exclusively emphasizing land use. Just wanted to share with you a little bit about the story of how we got here, because I think it's important to understand the context of Senate Bill 849 and its narrow focus, and narrow purpose, and narrow outcome. In 1968, when ODOT's predecessor, the Department of the Highway Department, decided to build I-205, they had to cut a swath through the Denai family's property in order to do that. The Denai family is the foundation's predecessor in interest. ODOT filed a lawsuit against the Denais to condemn their family property, and as a settlement of that, they agreed to build a service road and apparently agreed to unrestricted access rights to that service road and to Stafford Road because not ODOT, but a judge ordered that the service rights, the service road, and the access to Stafford Road would be without restriction, no restriction. So to the extent that unrestricted is a term of art, which I dispute, but the words here are no restriction as to access, no restriction. And ODOT didn't appeal that, and the Denai family didn't appeal that, and the outcome was that ODOT didn't have to pay as much money for the taking. That's the situation that we find ourselves in. There wasn't any zoning that applied, there was no huge comprehensive land use planning system in 1968. It's not like there's any specific set of limited assumptions. Back then people did and could do a lot of things with their property that they can't do here. We're building a new interchange. And there were a lot of activities going on in the Stafford area that suggested it was going to develop very heavily. This is not about access management. This is simply about a private property site. No more, no less. ODOT, as part of the circuit court case, designed and located the service road exactly where it was. This didn't have anything to do with the Denai family or the circuit court, so the court let ODOT make that call. But once having made that call and an unappealed circuit court judgment, it vested a property right that reasonable people did and could rely on. And if you look at the documents that we have here, we have tabs that are attached to show the circuit court judgment that show a senior representative, not a counter guy, but a senior representative of ODOT who just took a common sense look at this as well as with his wealth of experience at tabs too. And he says, by my reading, there's no restriction on access to the parcel from the service road or from Stafford Road, which is the edge of the service road. And in fact, if you look at, I believe it's tab 4, we have a map that shows the edge of the access control line that ODOT specifically requires. When we finally got down to asking the Attorney General for some help on this to guide ODOT to let it understand that when it accepts a circuit court award as to no restriction of access as part of a condemnation judgment, for whatever reason, and for better or worse, the Attorney General says the unrestricted access merely reserves the right to apply for a permit from ODOT, and then in three different places in the letter opine that ODOT would likely deny that access right. There is no alternative access to Tax Lot 900. No alternative access to Tax Lot
900. Mr. Chairman, Ms. Killington, has ODOT entered into discussions about, in my understanding, earlier discussion, either give access, or if there's no other access, either give access or they compensate for the property. Have they entered into discussions of compensation for the property?
No. And, you know, we're not asking for that. We simply, all we wanted to do in the context of a land use application was to talk to them about, you know, it's your service road, we have this right, but, you know, what would you like to see to make it work better? We're, you know, we're happy to make the kinds of improvements you want us to make. And what they said was, we don't have a right, we're not interested in talking to you. That is changing in the last few weeks when we've had a meeting. I don't know where that's going to go, but 849 is necessary in order to clarify in the limited set of circumstances where ODOT participates in a lawsuit against its own citizens, and it accepts and drives an outcome in that litigation, in a judgment, that says access is unrestricted, that you shall not imply a restriction. Real simple, but it's really important. And so it's a pretty narrowly tailored bill. I don't think the world will come to an end. In these circumstances where circuit judgments exist, ODOT, with its substantial authority, which we do not dispute, drove the process, had the right to limit the access and to pay for more or pay for less. It also had the right to establish the location and the design of the particular road at issue. When it doesn't exercise that substantial authority as a limitation, but rather provides unrestricted rights, and then gets away with not paying for that particular outcome, they can't change it then 31 years later, coming back and saying, well, we really meant something different, because their intention doesn't matter. It's what the circuit court said and what they didn't appeal. And that's what we're trying to clarify here, and that will put an end to this issue. Thank you very much.
I see there's no questions. I think you made your case very well. Thanks for being with us, and thanks for waiting us out.
Thank you so much.
Next on our list is Grace Cronin. Okay. We have Mr. Greenleaf with you again, I guess.
Mr. Chairman, I would note this is a disturbing trend. We're now on about a third attorney on this committee, and we've gone downhill rapidly from getting the consultations. We've got legal issues now.
I had a note here. Thank you very much. I was thinking the same way. Don't be offended. He's an attorney also, in case you didn't know.
Mr. Chairman, Grace Cronin with the Director of the Oregon Department of Transportation, and with me is Craig Greenlee. This came to my attention. Craig can give you the technical details of it, but I want to tell you why I care about this one.
We don't want to get into explicit details on any one specific issue in this committee. In generalities, if you like to zero on it for a moment, but we're not here to introduce bills to take care of one project in the state of Oregon, the whole state. So pretend like this is in Burns or something, which relates to...
Mr. Chairman, Senate Bill, we're here to testify on Senate Bill 849.
the map you have, we have presented you with a map of the intersection of I-5, a major interstate in the state, and I-205, a major interstate in the state. The hatched area you see on the first map is called an urban reserve. That means it's going to be urban pretty soon at some point. The second map you see is a Xerox of the land, and you can see we have a utility road that goes in. I tried to draw a little yellow circle around it, a utility road that goes in to service that property. The attorney is correct. We put that, first of all, we put the property, a bigger chunk of property, and put that interchange in and denied access to used the person's land. So what was left of the land that wasn't consumed by the transportation facility, we're forced to provide access to that piece of property.
At the time we built 217 and all, how was this property going to?
Mr. Chairman, the Clackamas County was in 1968 preparing, had in place certain zoning restrictions. I'm not sure.
Was it farmland?
It was farmland in terms of use.
At that time, it would have been for farm use and not for a big fancy shopping center or something.
I think that's a fair representation.
Now, Mr. Chairman, if you would look at the third map on there, and this is what we're asked to do. The Rolling Hills Church, somewhere between the second map and the third map, you can see sits on Borland Road, has good access to Borland Road, and is expanding. I think that's great. And they've also purchased, the foundation has purchased this piece of property, not 900. I have to look at the realities of this situation, and I do, and then I'll turn it over to my technician that can talk into the specifics of the bill. But as I look at the realities of the situation, we got some going concern that has direct access to Borland Road, wants to expand. That's great. God bless them. And they've expanded close up to this utility road. This utility road is about 300 feet from this major interchange of Stafford Road, which is the first access you come to off of I-5 when you take I-205. And under normal practices, we like to have it restricted about 800 feet from the interchange, just to give you a rough estimate of some of the others I've come across. So this is 300 feet from there. The county has told me this is where they want to expand next. This is an interstate interchange, and so it caught my attention that we ought not be legislating this particular issue, that it's a legitimate issue to fight for safety issues. We just see those safety issues just kind of coming right at us right now. In addition, there's an interchange to this Borland Road. You just have to drive a little bit further, and you're right there. So common sense tells me that we've got access to this piece of property that's right here, and ownership shows that the access to this other property is adjacent to people that already have access. So I don't want to hit the panic button and all of a sudden, when you talk about reasonable access, expand what's going on at this interchange without some careful thought. Now for the other careful thought, and Craig Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this case does illustrate the difference between the reservation of access issues and some of the permitting questions. We are looking at a use here that it will be substantially increasing the volumes of traffic that are going to be using this particular point of access. And we have provided, in addition to the map you've seen, testimony that explains the kinds of factors that we try and look at when we're trying to make sure that we can design something that is a safe treatment around this particular use. If you drive to this site today, you will see that there's a landscape business that also uses this particular road. And the road right now has such low volumes of traffic that it's appropriate and suitable perhaps to place bark dust or sawdust on that road surface just that's the current condition of the road. And it gives you an indication of just the levels of traffic that are using the road today.
Why was 205 built?
I think 205 was built to provide alternate access from northbound, southbound traffic instead of clogging on Interstate 5.
Yes. Would you agree that Portland was an urban area in 1968?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kremel, yes, I would.
Would you follow up? Would you also agree that that growth was anticipated in the 1960s, and that's one of the reasons why we came to land use laws and that sort of thing at the time that this highway and interchange was built?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kemal, I agree with that as well.
So irrespective of the fact that it was farmland in that area at the time that this interchange was built, then it was expected that the urban area would grow out that way, correct?
We, at that point, Mr. Chairman and Representative Kremel, didn't have in place the urban growth boundary requirements that we have in place today, but I think it's reasonable to assume that growth is occurring and that might be a reasonable expectation into the future.
So then why would an engineer, and I recognize that engineers weren't as smart in 1968 as they are in 1999, but why would an engineer allow or a department allow for an access to be that close to the interchange and not expecting that urban growth is going to come this way and not figure that that's someday going to be a conflict?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kremel, I think that what was trying to be accomplished there is to provide the legal obligation to provide access, which we did. It was for single-family residential purposes, which clearly had lower volumes of traffic. I don't believe that people were necessarily expecting that the road would be extended through to provide a connection even through a parking lot to Borland at that time.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add that, as I understand the court order, the only choice we had was right there or a little further north on the map that you see. That road had to, we were ordered to put that road in, so you had a few feet one way or the other. I assume they were trying to provide, again, assumption, most access for that property, given the court told us it had to go there.
I see more hands going up. Session's at 10 o'clock. We will go into work session on this also on Friday, possibly. We'll see what happens if anybody wants to go in work session. We're going to adjourn in 5 minutes, ask your questions accordingly, but I have one first. You're in a catch-22 position. This body's been criticizing you all session long for looking and not taking care of safety issues. Now you're trying to take care of safety issues and we're criticizing you again. I don't understand it. Representative Devlin?
Mr. Chairman, this isn't a criticism. This is a straightforward statement. This is in an urban reserve area that's currently being contested. Okay. But ultimately, let's say that ultimately this becomes urban. I'm not going to admit that, but we'll say it happens. If Rolling Hills wasn't in this issue, if they hadn't purchased this parcel, but it actually developed as multifamily, could you have denied it access without basically purchasing the property? Because that's the only access the parcel has.
No. Mr. Chairman, Representative Devlin, we have had occasions where the volume of traffic generated from a particular site would have such significant adverse consequences on the facility that our choice was either grant the permit or purchase the property. It's obviously a hard call when you're faced with that kind of a judgment. We have in many cases purchased property, and that's, you know, given that.
That's the only real access point that the property has.
That's correct.
Thank you. We can discuss this some more, and I'm curious. You're not going to slam dunk the Griffin Hill. Did you have
to... I'll wait.
Okay. Is that all your...
Mr. Chairman, if my testimony was, we've got an interchange we have to look at as though it's going to be a burgeoning urban interchange here pretty soon. We need to think of that as we look at what tensions and current events are grant and look into the future is something I've been trying to get us to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Each and every one of us have horror stories in our district. It is a real, real problem. We have to do something about it. And if we have to buy it, I think we should buy it. But we can't keep taking things away from people. And also, ODOT's main problem in this, I think, with all due respect, is some of their bedside manner in dealing with the people. We close the public hearing on this, and we are adjourned until Friday morning.
Pardon?
Oh,